A Biblical Approach to Death and Dying. This is Dr. Ammon again. This is tape two. And on this tape, we're going to take a look at the progression of grief. And this is side one. I'm going to find our loved one going through a process of feelings. And we're going to remember feelings are not right or wrong. They're just feelings. You're not a psychoanalyst. You're not trying to diagnose what stage the person is going through so that you can report to the family where you find the person. Not trying to do that at all. You're just trying to get an idea where he is or she is so that you can properly minister to them and know how to intelligently pray for them. Shock and confusion. Every one of us will be hit with it at one time or another. Now, you have to realize, too, that you're looking at the person who is has been diagnosed as terminally ill, the person who is dying, but realize that what you're actually seeing is the whole family goes through some of these same stages as they go through. And as a matter of fact, you might even find yourself going through some of these stages. So it's virtually impossible for you to diagnose, but yet it's very important that you're open to try to understand what he's feeling. Psalm 55 and verse 5 reports, "Fearfulness and trembling are come upon me, and horror has overwhelmed me." David also adds in Psalm 143:4, "Therefore is my spirit overwhelmed within me, and my heart is made desolate." Webster gives us this definition of shock. It's an unexpected, sudden upset of mental or emotional balance. You all know shock. My brother is so overwhelmed with the bad news that he's unable to function properly. Don't ask any questions or you're likely to hear, "I'm confused about the whole deal," quote unquote. In fact, you might wonder if he's totally lost his ability to choose any course of action. Go easy on the words. Sometimes there are none. Understand. Let the Word help you understand. Psalm 77, 2 and 3. "In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. My sore ran in the night and ceased not. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed." Imagine if someone said that to you. You'd probably think they were being wimpy. Well, it's easy for you to agree with the first reaction, especially after what we saw in the introduction regarding the feelings. Your brother has been overwhelmed to a degree which he has never been before. He can be so overwhelmed that he doesn't want to converse with anyone. You know, "Leave me alone. Let me in my despair. Don't bother me." He might feel his life is over, so there's no use to carry on. The bottom line is, he has no idea how to handle this new load of feelings. This is tough, but you, too, will be asking, "How can I help? I don't know what to do." Don't be shocked at your own feelings. This seems to be a very critical time in the whole process of going home. The day of his life is this day of his life is as confusing to him as it was when he first saw life from his mom's womb. No matter how he adds up the situation, it always comes up negative. Most of us were never prepared for this difficult time. We all would do anything to keep from this hour's experience, but yet, guess what? We'll all have it. Unfortunately, some plan to take their lives at this point. More men than women do, especially if they know they're going to die a painful, long-term, debilitating illness. Well, it is possible that prior to the terminal diagnosis, they've lost parts of their bodies and feel they just can't go any further. They've just changed too much. Their losses are too great. They add them up and they don't seem livable. They've paid a great price and now are shocked that the experience from now on will be worse. Some just can't take it. Recently, one brother asked if I would go with him as he had his test done on his back. I thought nothing of it, for I felt it was my calling to be there anyway. I usually am there when they have tests and might get good news or bad news. Down deep, I was deathly afraid that he had cancer in his back. You see, a good friend had just died a terrible death in his eyes, and he had decided it was not going to happen to him. This is what he said to me. He said, "Pastor Bill, I'll tell you the truth. If the doctor would have said I had cancer, I would have killed myself," quote unquote. Of course, this led to a rather lengthy conversation, but the point is, he knew that he would not be able to handle the experience. Now, if he is that sure already, what are the chances of handling a terminal illness? No one knows how he will react. And this is why I feel that shock and confusion are openers in any situation. In all fairness, all those who write about the experience say the same thing. Not directly, but we do agree. A lot of cases, the loved one has already gone through a gamut of ups and downs. Oftentimes, they've already become disfigured. How could we ever guess what it is like to lose a breast, a jaw, or a limb of our body? Isn't it tough enough to face the terminal decision without going out disfigured? Mary Beth Moster adds, "If a physical attribute is changed or removed, the patient has lost an important psychological coping mechanism." That's important. Well, we must consider these things, for if we don't, we might be cruelly impatient with their pleas. It might even be more shocking and confusing if the loved one was feeling that at least being disfigured was a life-saving procedure. Sometimes the hope that life will continue is enough to give them courage to face the future with a glimmer of hope, concluding that being disfigured is okay as long as life would continue. Well, little things do mean a lot. It's even more of a shock when the person seemed to be in great shape. I remember this runner died of a heart attack. I wonder, how in the world could that ever happen? That little cough seemed barely significant enough to call the doctor's attention, as one woman said. "I just couldn't believe that a tiny lump, which I paid so little attention to, could change things so rapidly." By the way, we all believe Romans 8:28, God causes all things to work together for the good to them that love God and are called according to His purpose, but yet this isn't the time to share it. It's true. But we're talking about feelings here, remember. Younger folks feeling betrayed, for they never planned to give up life before they barely began it. Often their parents are more in shock and feel more betrayed than the child. Shock's voice loudly calls, "Why?" Even the person who's lived a strong religious faith will question. But consider this. There are no clear answers from any source. This is indeed life's greatest trial. But you know what? Your loved one will receive something many don't, namely your care. How do I know? Well, you're listening to this tape and you're reading the books. You're doing your homework. Why? You care. I hope this isn't just doing an assignment or getting some credits. Pray this is changing your life. This is a time for quiet, listening love. It's a good time for a brotherly hug if you're so inclined, and I just happen to be. Don't get mad if he seems to be angry or with our Heavenly Father. Even Job was. You know, how often have we quoted Job? He said, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." Job 13:15. But have you ever heard the preacher quote the rest of that verse? Look it up for yourself if you don't believe me. "But I will maintain my ways before him," which means I'll give him a good argument for it. Job was a great guy, but like the rest of us who came from dust, he had his moments of shock and confusion too. It's true, it is tough to handle the truth that you're going to die unless the Lord intervenes. The feelings and the fears are so heavy. One will think he's going to die from shock itself. I have great confidence in this fact. I personally have never seen a person who didn't come through this stage into an attitude which enables him, enables those who love him to meet his basic needs of comfort, love, and assurance. Do you ever read books, James Dobson's book on When God Doesn't Make Sense? Well, confusion can certainly be a heavy, heavy load, even for the most mature believer. God is always faithful. He at times uses children, nurses, friends, doctors, pastors, cards, flowers, smiles, hugs, or even tasteful jokes to break our loved one out of the feelings of shock and confusion and re-enter the realities he's facing. I entered the hospital room of a friend one day and interrupted a nurse and my friend having a good belly laugh. I was curious but very glad that the room wasn't cold and icy. I asked what was funny. Big, sheepish, slightly blushing grin proceeded and preceded the explanation. I was concerned about losing control of my bladder, and I asked the nurse about the consequence. She said, "Well, we would have to insert a catheter." And I asked if that would hurt, and she bluntly said, "Do you want to try it now and see?" The catheter is a serious thing, but it became a catalyst to break the tension of the boredom of waiting for the next treatment, word, or maybe a change of the situation. Y'all have heard Proverbs 17:22, "A merry heart doth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones." Many learn to live a quality of life which is far superior to anything they had ever known to this point, but they must first move through the shock and confusion feelings and grow through even the toughest experience. But again, we always make it. Now, she might choose silence. It is true my loved one is in a tough spot. This might be a very quiet time, for she might be so overwhelmed that she becomes totally silent. This too will pass. Be patient. She would do anything to change things. Every time she wakes up, she hopes that her situation would just have been a bad dream. But the reality, again, will set in the moment she feels her inability to move or looks into a mirror, which often reports her weight loss or tired appearance. It is at this time she will feel some shock until she can determine to make the best of this day and enjoy every breath of it. It is at this point I hope there is a loving, caring person like you at her side. Pray that you'll be ready to bring the touch of comfort and consolation. But what can a spiritual caregiver do? Well, remember, you don't have to do anything but be there, if you feel led, you can pray and you can sing, you can listen. I love to softly sing a little song that is very familiar to all of us. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. You know, it's amazing, even with my crummy voice, how that can calm a moment and bring a little bit of peace in that shocking, revelatory moment. Unless you know the person is very victory-minded, save some of the mighty warrior, quote-unquote, songs for another occasion. Great portions to read are Psalm 139, 1 through 18, or Isaiah 40, 25 through 30. When you pray, don't pray for great moves of God or demand that Satan lets go. Rather, pray that God will be close and that the caregiver knows that you intend to stick with her no matter what. What really works best is to sit holding her hand and being silent. When a person is shocked, the last thing they want to hear is a sermon. Pray for wisdom and insight. Don't rush the stage. Encourage the person by the word, comforting prayer, a little word of singing. Now you've caught them at that first stage, that difficult stage, that shocking stage. Now let's move on to what might be the second stage. Remember, we're not trying to categorize everybody and say that everybody reacts the same way. What we're trying to do is to see possibly this is where this person is. The second stage very possibly will be denial. And I'll quote a scripture, Isaiah 38, 1 through 3. "In those days Hezekiah sick unto death, and Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, came unto him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Then Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed unto the Lord, and the Lord, and said, remember now, O Lord, I beseech you, how I have walked with thee in truth, with a perfect heart, and have done that which was good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. You know what we found out? God gave him a few more years of life. Well, sometimes he does, and sometimes he doesn't. But denial is merely a way of trying to convince oneself of the unreality of the situation, so as to postpone further realities. In short, it's a type of defense mechanism. Well, what's this guy feeling? Well, he is so upset by the reality of the situation that he's convincing himself that the situation isn't true. That's simple. We could quit there. That's it, isn't it? His immediate response is, I don't believe it. He feels that he will wake up only to find they diagnosed him wrong or that it was all just a bad dream. When asked about his condition, he will offer words such as, oh, it's okay, they made a mistake, or even, God will not let this happen to me. Mentally, you're encouraged to feel his enthusiasm, because it makes it easier for you. But be careful not to burst his bubble. Feelings of health help much more than feelings of despair. Don't be shocked if he clams up and offers, I don't want to talk about it. Be just as careful not to add any false hope. Let the present reality dictate your responses. If there is hope for cure, pray and encourage it. But if the doctors and the surgeons warn you to help him put his life in order, then begin to show that regardless of the reality of the situation, you will be by his side. Encourage him. I will be there. That's your word. He needs to feel your love and support. Yeah, he just has to have someone who's going to be beside him. Oh, how important a primary caregiver. Many a wife, many a mother, many a husband, many a wife has stayed by and done such an excellent job of caregiving. Even when they would love to report something different, they can't. This is the reality. God bless those people. Pray for those folks. Encourage those people. You're a pastor. From the pulpit, tell the congregation how much you appreciate that kind of self-sacrificing love. Well, it's a real difficult situation because you're having a tough time accepting it yourself. In fact, sometimes the person closest to the sick person is often denying it more than she is. Your denial is due to the fact that you can't face the separation which will ultimately ensue. In fact, you could do some anticipatory grieving yourself. This is normal. Be patient with yourself. You too are hoping that this isn't really happening. If the diagnosis is true, it will mean that his entire world is about to change. You know it, don't you? You know how hard it is for anyone to face death, regardless of how strong he might appear to be. This is a bigger than life, and if the truth were known, this is bigger than life, and if the truth were known, you'd know, you'd do anything to not have to face it also. You grasp for whatever hope is available because the truth is you don't know how to deal with it if it is true. Your heart grows heavy as you contemplate the future. God help us. Before any contact, be sure you have prayed for wisdom and guidance. Remember your prayer walks. Make that 5-minute walk with God in your prayer closet in the afternoon or in the morning or however, before you go to that bedside. Regardless of how close you are to him, let me share some cautions. Here are some cautions. If you think you can't face him without falling apart, then be sure you take someone else with you. Take some time to talk and to pray with your fellow visitor before you enter. Secondly, don't give him any false hope. God may choose to heal him, but then again, he might not. So don't open up with, I know God is going to keep you well, quote unquote. You will greatly hinder his acceptance if you give him false hope or prophecies. Please don't open up with, God told me to tell you. If you're going to share your own wishes, false prophets used to be stoned. True. Don't present any illustrations of others who found out the diagnosis were wrong or others who were healed. And there will be a time when it will be great to share healing stories. Modern medicine seems to give great hope of the possibility of recovery. This is not a time to share any miracle cures you have read about. Don't come in with any articles on miracle cures that might bring false hope. Check them out with your doctor. He might hold on to those and then have to go through the whole process toward acceptance later. And I've said this before, but don't try to play amateur psychologist. Six, don't attack their feeling or faith just because it's surprising how he reacted. Be merciful and understanding as God is with you. He'll change. Quote, a man dying of cancer writes, quote, the greatest test of a Christian's life is to live with the silence of God, unquote. He might even feel as though God had not heard his cry. This is not a faithless feeling. It's just a feeling. Seven, don't ever agree with him that his theology has failed. Dobson instructs, quote, there's no greater distress in human experience than to build one's entire way of life on a certain theological understanding and then have it collapse at a time of unusual stress and pain, unquote. Good word. God never fails. You just can't put him in a box. That's what Ecclesiastes 3:11 says. He hath made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he hath set the world in their heart. No man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. You're just not going to know it. Now, in this book, I've tried to help you to understand what your brother is feeling, but I have not tried to equip you to do a job that not even the most dedicated worker is able to do. All people are different. All strengths, gifts, weaknesses are different, and how disease affects our bodies are also different. You will learn some things that you will feel positive about, and they will help, but don't introduce them just to show interest, intelligence, or spirituality. If you aren't careful, you could make the whole situation harder on the one you want to help the most. Well, here you are again, knowing the truth, but his denial. He is in denial, but must act as if nothing were wrong. This is tough, but it's a lot easier when you know that this is just part of the process by which he is dealing with the worst news he's ever heard. Be kind and considerate. You will have a lot of time to give words of kindness and understanding. It'll not always be like this. It will change as time goes on. Your own feelings of helplessness and hopelessness will ebb and flow. Don't neglect yourself. This process will be hard on you, as it is on him at times, believe it or not. Don't try not to burn out. If you burn out, he won't even have you. Invite as many of your family members and friends in as you can to feel comfortable, that you feel comfortable with. Don't let anyone help who merely upsets you or him. Be open and honest with all who are trying to help and to understand. Remember, there are some honest questions as to when or how a person should be told the shocking truth concerning a situation. Don't ever conclude that you know him well enough to know how and when to help him in the face of the reality of his condition. Timing is very, very important. Don't forget it. I would not have you blunder into a situation only to do something that you will regret when he is gone. Let others help you with the tough decisions. Lean on others in the family, your pastor, a support group, or medical staff. Hospice has some fine professionals who will help you with these tough decisions. Denial might even have its benefits. The feeling may buy some time until he is strong enough to move on to the next step and in his journey. Keep it all positive. Now, turn your tape over for the next side.